Good evening and welcome to the sixth edition of Saving Lives. I'm Bernadette here and we have Art doing all the mechanicals.
Good afternoon.
Hey, and we have a special guest here. Her name's Denise. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi.
I know Denise is a little nervous. I've been getting a little, I'm always nervous, I believe, actually, when I do these shows. But Denise is a special woman in my life, and you know, we like to talk about recovery here. So if anybody wants to call in at any time during this broadcast, you can dial in at 609-241-7103. So I met Denise in recovery, who she's been one of these amazing women in my life. And I'm able, amazingly, to partner up with her in a new business venture that we both have going on. And, you know, I'm going to have Denise share a little bit kind of what brought her self into recovery.
Oh, okay. So I have been, I started using when I was really young and really young. And it just went crazy from there. I'm not that young anymore. I got.
Yes, you are.
I don't know. I have to say that it was my. There was a lot of factors involved, but I started using very young, and I went to my very first rehab when I was 18 or 17 and got turned 18 in the rehab. And from that point, I stayed clean for a little while. I was in treatment for a long time, but because I got clean young, I thought I was missing out on something and relapsed. Mm-hmm. And the relapse lasted for 8 years.
And you relapse. Now have like many years.
Double digits.
She's like considered a dinosaur in the recovery world.
Yes.
But she's not a dinosaur in real life. Don't get me wrong.
Don't
misconstrued. What's that word? Misconstrued what I'm trying to explain.
I'm very young at heart.
Oh my God, absolutely.
So this time around, I actually got clean because there was no other choice for me. It was actually death or get clean. I always say you ride it from, some people can see it on the outside, how some of us are using, and that's how it was the first time you could see, because I lived on the streets, and I did all that. My second go around, I learned how to play the game, basically.
Mm-hmm. And the manipulation, the lying,
all
the cheating,
of it. And
the stealing.
I was the PTA mom that nobody knew was doing the things. Even my closest friends had no idea what I was actually doing, and that's how cunning and baffling this disease is. So, and then I looked up, and I'll tell this how long ago, I opened up a phone book to the blue pages, and I found a 12-step meeting, and that was it for me.
See, that's incredible, because I know, I'm thinking of like, wait, how did I find one? I found in where the meetings are when I was in treatment, and just to hear like where you've been and like where you are now, it's just like remarkable. Like recovery in general, and like living the life freedom from active addiction in any form is a beauty in itself, you know?
It's a gift.
It truly is a gift.
I truly believe that, this might sound a bit on the insane side.
Nah.
But
I'm the host here. Do you know who the host is? I'm like nuts.
But I find that being the addict was a gift, because I was given the gift of recovery, and it has allowed me to grow as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people, I could probably list about 10 people that I know who are not in recovery.
That's it?
Who, right off the top of my head, really quick, that could benefit from the 12 steps of the principles and the concepts of the program that I'm involved with.
Right.
So I find that would be, the world would be a much better place if we all tried to just be a better human being. And that's what the program for me and being in recovery is about. It's just being better. We fail, we're human, we do things. But at the end of the day, I take a look at it and I try to do better the next day.
Mm-hmm. That's what I say. Every day when I wake up, I was like, please just help me be better than I was the day before.
Right.
And that's all you can do, is just try on a daily basis to be a little bit better. Anybody that is listening and wants to give us a call with insights and, you know, whether you are in recovery yourself, you have a family member that's in recovery, a loved one, Whatever it may be, you know, recovery is all stems, all it comes in all forms, whether you're recovering from, you know, suicidal attempts, eating disorders, you name it, you know, recovery is such a broad base. You know, give us a call at 609-241-7103. We know Art here, he is not himself in recovery, but he's recovering from a family member in recovery.
Yep.
So, you are in recovery in a sense.
Two, actually.
Wow, that's
because I had my daughter and my nephew.
Wow, that's tough because it is a family disease.
But it's hopeful because, well, out of the two, one's in recovery currently. The other one I think is still occasionally using, but we'll be able to deal with him as, you know what I mean,
time as goes. Time comes, right. Yeah. And, you know, for me, it took a lot to even admit the fact that I actually had a problem. And to ask for help, I would never ask anybody for help. I still struggle with asking people for help. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I just have to keep trying and keep it moving.
I think that some of us have learned different things, survival skills, mm-hmm. and different things that run in our families that we don't even realize that we teach our children. And I know for myself, I have to do the same thing. And, you know, for me, asking for help was a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it as a sign of weakness. So it was something that I had to unlearn. It just was, that was a difficult thing to do. It was really,
Light does
really
that all the time. And Art just constantly says it's because he needs to change light bulbs. And I think he just needs to accept the fact that there's just electronics malfunction around me at times.
It is your higher power.
Exactly.
Your message.
Yes. Well, that is, I would say it's true for Bernadette because she comes into my house and all of a sudden my laptop won't work. So
this is true. I probably mentioned it too before on the show where everything just malfunctions. And I was trying to like touch the screen and she was all excited about showing me her new computer and it would not work. And Art was having an issue with his laptop. And of course I strolled down the hallway. Here I am.
In that note, it came on when you came in. So
see,
I was
this, that's good. Okay.
She's very powerful.
Mm-hmm. I just kind of like, you know, send my little good juju stuff in that way into that general area.
But I think it's admirable that you're so supportive of the people that are in your life that are in recovery.
It's a process, you know. When addiction walks into your house for the first time, you don't really know how to handle it. I mean, you know what you know or what you grew up with. I mean, I grew up, you know, the drug of choice for my father was alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he doesn't drink anymore, and he's been clean and sober for probably 40 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. But he didn't go to meet him. I mean, he just threw it down one day and said, you know, enough was enough.
Right.
Everyone's not that lucky, right?
Mm-hmm. How about the news the other day, was it on the news or did I read an article? The stuff that's going down in Kensington, they're trying to...
Oh, it's that there's an area down by the tracks where...
Yeah, and they're trying to clean
it like
it up now.
It's like a community of addicts that are living there. They're like... You know, I read the article, I saw the pictures, and it's like...
Sad.
It's very sad. It's like the land of misfit toys, mm-hmm. you know, in a lot of ways.
Right in your backyard.
Right in your backyard, and we want to ignore that it's there. That's
it's like
why
what you see doesn't exist.
And breaking the stigma is what's so important too, because we are everywhere. We are everywhere.
Your doctors, your teachers, your lawyers.
We are everywhere. And
your daughters, your sisters, your fathers.
Right. And because I've been in recovery for as long as I have, and because of the fact that I've also worked in the healthcare field, there's a lot more of those upper class or white collar addicts than most people would know. They just have better doctors. They don't have to. They don't go to the street right away. Eventually, it will happen.
And you'd be surprised how true this really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking doctors and lawyers, mm-hmm. and they have money. They yeah. have access. What amazes me is that they can do it and be functional.
Mm-hmm.
But there are functional addicts that are out there, and you would never know. They use every day before they go to work, mm-hmm. and at lunchtime and in the bathroom, and you would never know because they do their thing.
There was many years I like to think I was pretty functional, and nobody knew until it got bed where I couldn't get what I needed from my doctor. Right. So when that time I got, I, you know, I hope it doesn't happen to anybody in the grips of that, but like when that comes and the doctor isn't enough anymore, that's where it really gets bad.
And especially now with how, when you see that a lot of the doctors and the government and the authorities are coming down a little bit harder on the script writers, they're not as quick to write a script, or write one for the amount.
Right. Here in Jersey, they can't. They have 5 days now by law to write pain medication, opioid prescriptions.
What do you mean? Like the law?
It's a five-day supply?
Yep, you can
at a time.
That's actually.
Or like, so you say you get your wisdom teeth out, you get prescribed the opiates for 5 days, and that's it.
No more than 5 days.
Wow, that is incredible.
And, I would have been in a lot of trouble when I had my wisdom teeth.
and you know what? And it's but even when you have your wisdom teeth out, what are they giving you? A prescription for 30? You know, and you're using 5 or 10, maybe, you know, to subdue the pain. And because of what it is, you know, you're not going to continue, you know, to take it.
You'd be amazed about the amount of physical pain your body can endure. Like, literally amazed. There was a particular incident 2 summers ago, and I literally had a glass door shatter and go into my ankle, and I refused to take the pain medicine. So I had the ER doctor, literally, I'm surprised I didn't, like, I thought I was dying. She was pulling, looking for glass with tweezers, and she couldn't find it. And I'm like, no, there's glass in my ankle. I feel it in there. But I survived through that. And then I was able to be like, I'm a badass. Like, yes, I know.
That was actually the subject of our health and wellness show last night was, you know, pain medications and alternatives to opioid pain medication.
That's what it is. It's learning the alternatives. I have back pain. I know Burn deals with pain. Mm-hmm. I've given birth to children in recovery. I have broken my tailbone. I have messed up an ankle. So I've been through some things. What I found to be most shocking was when I broke my tailbone, and I was in such pain. I did take medication at first, but when they told me I had to go see an orthopedist 2 days later, and he wrote me a script, being who I am, immediately called my sponsor. I go to meetings. There's a way that you know, I don't take it every 12 hours or whatever it is. You know, we have this, my sponsor and I have a protocol that we do. But I went back 2 weeks later to see the orthopedist, and he was ready to write me another script. And I was like, no. 2 weeks after that, he was like, so you want another script? And I was like, no.
That's what they're accustomed to. But see,
it's much harder for them to do that today, you know, because of the new laws that they have in place.
Right.
Kevin and I actually went on to Steve Travalese's show on 101.5 when they first passed this law. And we were taking calls from people, and man, the phones lit up from people that were, you know, on long-term pain management for, you know, backs or, you know, whatever it happened to
me. You'd be surprised the amount of grandmothers and grandfathers are in rehab right now.
And they did not, I mean, they did not want to hear that their prescription was going to be limited to 5 days and they had to find an alternative.
Right. I do work in the insurance business, and I am very well aware
of all those calls.
Of all those calls.
Every day.
And what amazes me now is we actually have these pain centers. They're pain centers, which are kind of scary because they have shots now, and they have... It's not just the pills. It's the shots. Mm-hmm. It's the patches. It's the this.
But you know, if you have long-term pain, and I'm going to use my mother as an example. She had a disc thing in her back. She's 83 years old. She doesn't want to have the surgery, even though that would probably help that. But what they came up with as an alternative was to burn the nerve that was giving
causing
her pain.
Right.
And it, like, immediately, you know, went away, and that pain went away. So there are alternatives to, you know, opioid pain medication,
to solve
your problem.
Well, there's yoga. There's yoga. Meditation. There's heat. There's ice. There's swimming.
your chakras as well. You know what I mean? When you get into all that, any chiropractor can really go in and give you almost
reflexology
instant relief through that.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's like one of the things that me and Denise partnered up with. So like we are literally a team with building and educating people on alternative medicine, which is essential oils from doTERRA. And these essential oils literally are nature's pain medicine. They are nature's energy.
Gift.
They gifts are literally of gifts of the earth. And like, it's, you know, yes, you know, I do this radio podcast for recovery, and yes, I cut hair, and I run around like a million places on a daily basis, but my main goal is to educate people on alternative medication, because I feel like there are so many kids that broke their arm and got addicted to the pain medicine because of the prescriptions they were on. Yet had they have known that there is something that will take that pain away that much faster, and you have no side effects, no side effects.
And there's an alternative there, but you know, parents blame themselves when their child gets really addicted, and that really shouldn't be the case, because as good parents, they went to the dentist and they were prescribed an opioid pain medication, and as good parents, we made sure that Sally and Johnny took it every 4 hours right. as prescribed.
And exactly, that is the history. That is what we did. But now we live in a different time frame. As a mom of a few kids, one, my youngest being 17, he just had a root canal done. He was in a lot of pain for a few days. He used Motrin, and he used clove, and he used basil as ways to help with the pain until we could get him into the specialist right. for a root canal. I called the doctors and I said, look, is there anything that we can do to get him in sooner? And they were like, well, does he need something with pain? And I said, we have a family history. I don't want him to have that pain relief. Mm-hmm. Can you suggest how many? And they told me the maximum dosage of Motrin that he could take.
Right.
So that's, but I'm educated, you know, and
but before but we all became educated about the drug prescription right. drug problem that we're currently in, as good parents, we
my
followed
parents
the doctor's, you know,
right,
whatever
exactly.
they said we
and,
did.
And my parents mm-hmm. didn't do anything. I can tell you that my parents, being who they were, there was nothing that they could have done truly to change the fact that I chose to put a drug in my body and the disease was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most parents want to beat themselves up because mm-hmm. somehow they feel that they failed it. And that's just not the case.
It's normally the complete opposite. I know growing up, my mom, I would be like, oh, I have a bellyache or my stomach hurts. And she'd be like, you're fine. Like, so it had nothing to do with my parents by any means. You're fine. Like, just go to school. And I'm like, no. Yeah, I just didn't want to go to
we
school.
Have addictive personalities by nature. Some of us are worse than others.
Right, exactly, exactly.
You know, Kevin and I compare it to, you know, some of us have a switch, you know, and some of us can shut that switch off. I traveled with a band for a long, long, many, many moons.
Well,
temptation was put in front of me.
Did you play an instrument?
I actually did all their sound and lighting.
Oh,
and,
cool.
Naturally, electrically, awesome.
Does that make all sense to you?
It does make so much sense. So I'm like, why don't I have this gift?
So it was easy to be in a bar every night playing. You know what I mean? And have a bartenders go, hey, we came up with this new drink. And hey, try this. And hey, let's go out into the parking lot. And hey, at your break, sniff some of this. I mean, we weren't innocent, okay? We were children of the 60s. But once I got married and had my first child, I was able to, you know, and I left that life to go get, you know, a normal job.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to shut that switch off, you know what I mean, and move on and raise my children and that type of thing. Most people can't do that. You know, they can't shut that switch off. Kevin, the same way, he was a politician. He could be a reception every single night drinking, you know. So you have to go, you know, I need to shut this switch mm-hmm. off. I can't do this.
Right.
See, that's what it comes down to. And I guess when you talk about it, it comes down to fear. Because for me, it's fear that my children will have the genetics. So I live in the fear, you know, that some parents don't
right.
live in. But it is opening Pandora's box. And I don't want to open Pandora's box. However, I know kids will be kids and they will try things. But I tell them, this is Pandora's box. Be aware that you're going to open Pandora's box. They think
it's I'm so
crazy.
Funny because I'm thinking of Catherine and I'm like, she is totally like, you guys are lame, like for even trying that stuff. Like that is her. Like I'm like, you're just amazing. Like to me, if I was at eight, like I wouldn't. I'm like, she is like, you don't have to worry about her.
I'm truly blessed because my children have never seen me use. So right. that I'm blessed with.
And even when you get down to, you know, marijuana use, again, I can care less what some 45-year-old man does behind his closed door after he worked all day. I do care what a 15-year-old is doing.
That's exactly
you know what
right.
I mean? Behind a closed door. because it's going to affect their growth. They're still growing, you know, whether they want to think it or not. I mean, you know, we were all 15. We all drank and did things and, you know, whatever they told you not to do, we went and did, you know.
Mm-hmm. I never liked weed or pot. I liked the uppy.
I liked anything that took me out of myself.
So. Right.
Even if I didn't like it, I took it.
Mm-hmm. Normally, when I did the pot, it was to come down off of the other stuff because I haven't slept in a couple days.
But you know what the scary thing is the kids today, it's not the pot
it's of what's the 60s. On it. It's not. It's not clean.
No, it's heroin. The problem.
They don't want to smoke weed. It smells. It stinks. It's messy to mess with.
You get caught easier.
They would rather have what's called concentrates. You know what I mean? Which is even worse for them because it's a concentrated, you know, THC hit that you're taking.
Someone once said to me recently that, you know, the what is going on today. And I know we're of all different generations in the room, but what is going on today is very different from when I was using or when you were using, because we used, I don't know about you, but I mean, you were part of a band. It was about recreation in the beginning. It truly was about recreation. It was about being around those people and you did those things. And it was about being with people. I see more and more that there's no socialization too much with the kids.
No, not anymore. And I think
that makes
exactly
it even
right.
worse. So you don't notice that you have a problem as fast because, he's always in his room playing the video games.
And they're loners. They're more by themselves.
Yes,
and
their phone.
Our generation, we were more like, hey, I'm going out. I'll see you later. Right. Whether you we met out, on the corner and hung
didn't
out.
Didn't matter. Didn't matter.
You had to knock up on the doors.
Yeah.
You know, now it's everything's in the phones.
You know, until we had cars, we hung on the corner. I mean,
in the park.
The rule was to be home when the streetlights came on.
That's what I was just going to say. You were out the minute you could get your chores done, and you didn't come back until dinner. And then when dinner was over, you were back out until the streetlights came on.
But I just don't think that all the kids today have such a social life because of video games and cell phones. I mean, people walk around looking down. They don't walk around looking to people.
I actually said that today to someone. I was cutting their hair, and I was like, I am, like, worried for the kids these days, like, the little kids, for them to grow up in the world of not even being able to be in line somewhere and just have a conversation with somebody in line. Like, that worries me.
They don't know how to speak to people. Right, they don't know how to speak to people.
I'm, like, obnoxious, and I used to, like, have to take the bus, like, years ago, and I would be the one, like, talking to Sally Mae, who's, like, 80-something years old, and loved it.
But this is also an issue that will, when we're looking at these children or these kids or their 20-year-olds who are going through this period of life, them not having these social skills is what is causing them the real difficulty when they come into the rooms of recovery, because they do not know how to communicate. They don't know how.
You know, I watch them sit across from each other and text each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, put the phone down and talk to each other.
They don't. Yeah. Everybody's faceless. Everybody. There's no human connection. There's no spiritual connection. So it's hard for them to grasp.
Their friends are online, not physical, where they can go interact with them on a regular basis.
Right, and chances are they live hours away and they've never actually been in front of each other physically.
The other scary thing is the synthetic drugs that are available to them and are the most unsafe thing. You don't know what you're taking, where it came from, if this is the same as this. I mean, you know, it's not quality checked like it came out of the FDA.
I actually had one of the children, I won't say which one, actually smoked some things, and I had an argument or a conversation about them doing that, and I said, you don't know where it came from, and he said, yes, I do. It came from Joe, you know, and it was like, you have no idea what I'm talking about here. I was like, but where did he get it? Well, you know, I know the guy that he got it from, but where did he get it? Like, it goes, you know how many times it's been stepped on by the time it got to
you? Well, you know,
you?
I watched this one show, it was like 2020 or something like that, where these two girls, I mean, honor roll students who never did anything wrong, they were experimenting on a Friday night. Parents were going away for the weekend. They bought some synthetic acid or whatever it is that was manufactured in China. And the one girl died from taking it because it had so much in it that, you know, the girl didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And the other girl, you know, got high but didn't die. So you don't know. And there's no coming back from that. It's not an oops, I made a mistake.
No.
It's an oops, you've devastated the lives of everyone, you know what I mean, that you had touched at some point.
How about, too, like how a few years ago that the bath salts crisis that was going on, that literally made you like a zombie eating a real life zombie.
Some of the videos people
just
put
eating
up
people's faces.
I couldn't even watch that
it
stuff.
It was awful. One of the moms like ate her baby's hands and her feet. Like, are you kidding? It's just mind boggling, and it's sad that. And this is why we are here and we talk about this kind of stuff, so that people can realize that, like, hey, you know,
recovery is possible.
It is possible.
It's not only is it possible; it is living beyond.
Speaking
your
of phones,
dreams, living beyond your wildest dreams, mm-hmm. is really what recovery is. It has afforded me the opportunity to figure out who I am and actually enjoy life. Just enjoy life. There's no other way, you know. I can't explain what it's like to get up in the morning and be okay with me. Mm-hmm. And I know people who are not in recovery, who are not drug addicts or alcoholics. They have whatever their other issues are, you know, because everybody's got something. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got something.
Yep.
That cannot get up in the morning and say those words, that can say what we say, because we work on ourselves, because, again, we were given the gift of addiction. Even when it's awful, we have to look past how bad it is.
You need to change your perspective on a lot of things. I know, like, there's...
there's another choice. There's mm-hmm. there's always a choice. I've had a lot of loss in my family, in my life, when it comes to the disease of addiction. And it's not... Don't give up. I think that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, don't give up. Because if you give up... There's no hope. There's no hope. I always say, as long as there's breath, there's hope. Mm-hmm. As long as there's breath, there's hope. I get frustrated because being an addict, and I want to be clean, and some days I want to use. There's some days I want to use. I would like to be that mom mm-hmm. or that woman, that woman now who gets done work and has that glass of wine. The reality of it is it's not a glass.
It's the bottle.
It's the bottle and maybe the one that you have in the closet that nobody knows about mm-hmm. while you're going to the bathroom. That's reality. That's my reality. I would love that. That would be great. However, it is playing the tapes through, knowing what is really next. You know, we think about those things with other things that we do. We think, you know, when we go to buy a car, a lot of times, not everybody, but you think it through. Like, can you afford it? Can I afford to use? Can I afford it? No, I cannot. But it's the ripple effect that when you use, how's it going to affect everybody? And some of us just don't care. They get to that point where they think that there is no other way, or the pain gets too great. And I do think that some do pass away because that is in some way them getting some sort of relief. I do believe that, that they didn't deserve to live like the way that they were living. Some people, they just suffer so greatly. And it's very sad for the families that are left behind who struggle with why.
Right.
Why?
There was some guests.
They're always searching for that answer.
Right. Wasn't there a husband and wife here a few weeks ago that just lost their son?
Yeah.
It's like every day there's something. Yes. You know, I was told early in recovery to make sure you got an outfit to attend a lot of funerals.
That was Mrs. Grazzo. She actually, and Mrs. Oswald came to the Chasing the Dragon, Chasing News special too. Mm-hmm. And she had, it was weeks. We just went to that funeral 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And there she was.
And so the fact that they came to talk about what it was like, you know, to lose their child and stuff. Parents need to not be afraid.
There's a lot more. There's a lot more support groups now than there ever was. I mean, when I first got clean years ago, my mom had no one to turn to. Really, there was the they had the one group. It was a group where the parents got really strict and you just threw them out. Tough love. That's what it was considered.
Was it like one of those military camps?
Yeah, tough love. It was a group of people that came to the house and they told your parents how to be tough and throw you out and how to stay strong. And she saved my life by being that way. She absolutely saved my life because I was the one who would have just kept coming back and I would have just kept going. And I needed that tough love. I needed to be told, you're not coming back unless you're clean, and that's it. And that's what worked. And I'm alive. Now, if I would have passed, I don't know what my mother would have felt like.
That's what works because our parents are enablers by nature. I mean, it's not like you plan your life and that's how you're living it because that's what you want to do. It's just a natural type of reaction that it happens. Mm-hmm. And you know, the biggest barrier, I'm a recovery coach and a recovery coach trainer.
Oh, okay.
And the biggest,
so he's part of tough love.
So the biggest barrier to someone's recovery is usually their family. And once you can kind of separate them apart, it's the perfect time for the family to get help well because, you know, I constantly say it's not an individual's disease. It affects the whole family.
Even like when I was in treatment, they had the family members that wanted to come and visit the patients in there, they had to go through a whole course in a class the day before for them to even be able to be a guest and be a visitor.
Yeah, actually, I thought that was good. I know when my daughter was up at Bergen, you know, going through her detox and then her 28 days. Saturdays was Family Visitors Day. So when you went to visit, you brought whatever it is, you know, they were allowed to have, you know, and when you checked in. And there was like a 90-minute family meeting about addiction. It was almost like a little Narnon type thing to kind of educate you.
And explain to them the whole thing.
I had already, at this point in time, I knew all this. But I thought it was awesome that they were not forcing the families, but this is part of the process. You know what I mean? You need to get help
they need
for yourself
to know.
As well.
They need to know. What I was looking up is my niece, Samantha, actually is very much involved in a vigil in reference to overdose awareness because we've lost so many people in our family to this. I've lost two brothers, and my ex-husband actually passed away from the disease of addiction. So because of the family connection and so many other people, you know, that's just immediate family, not just the extended.
Right.
But that immediate family, Samantha is good, and she's involved with this vigil for overdose awareness and the overdose awareness walk that's in Eddystone that's coming up. Which is about the families and them taking, getting some knowledge that this is not like we'll pay off his fines or we'll keep doing this because you can keep doing and doing.
We tell parents
doing
exactly that. You know, it's there's not a line for enabling. I mean, it's what you think is right. I'm not saying here's $50, go get something to eat and take them to a restaurant and buy them a meal.
Right. No money. You know, but
that doesn't mean you can't do things to assist them.
Right.
You know, just to kind of help them get through this hump and get into recovery and kind of move on. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. I struggled with that myself with my ex-husband.
My sister, I had to go through the same thing with my sister, and I'd be like, it's okay. You know, buy him a pack of cigarettes. What's he going to go do something illegal to do it? I mean, he's doing everything that he said he was going to do. He went to detox. He's in recovery. He's living in a sober home. Mm-hmm. He's looking for a job, so it's okay to help him.
Right.
It's not enabling him. It's your son. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you want to see them move ahead in life, just like we all do with our children, right?
Mm-hmm. We don't want to be that reason, though, that they do. That's what they think. That if I give them the money.
Oh, I feel those questions
all day
long.
Or if I don't, if I don't, well, you know, I just want to make sure he's okay. And that breaks my heart, too. The parents who are like, well, he's at home, so that means he's okay. He's shooting dope in your bathroom. He's not okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I understand that you think that he is, and I can't imagine. I could never, I don't know. I have not walked in those shoes, thank God. So there's no right or wrong answer when it comes to parenting to begin with. Certainly not in this situation.
Yeah. I hear Kevin say, if I didn't hear him say it once, I've heard him say it a million times. You know, you want to know me, you don't want to be me, you know? And I mean, they found his son, you know, dead on his bedroom floor from a heroin overdose. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around losing someone like that. But
it's devastating.
To watch those parents that have lost one really give back, and I guess the commitment is to just, if they can save one child from having to go through that, or one family from having to go through the grief that they went through, that's satisfaction enough.
If anybody is listening and has some insight on, you know, what we're talking about, please call in at 609-241-7103. I'm noticing your shirt too, Art. I like that one. I need to get my City of Angels t-shirt.
I just ordered new hoodies too.
Did you get my size? I'm not going to tell my size.
All sizes.
We're not going to tell my size on air because I don't even freaking know what it is.
No.
But I was all excited. I was like, oh, can it be a certain color? And I was like, I just want the logo. And I'm like trying to just, I'm like, just let me get it the fucking t-shirt. Let me just get that.
These were actually last year's run shirts.
Looks good. It's a good color.
I made the mistake of getting them in two colors, gray and purple. And everybody wanted the gray because they had purple last year.
Oh, geez.
So I learned a lesson.
Right. So you probably have a big box of them.
Actually, we had a few extras, really not all that many.
That's a good sign, though.
What happened with last year's run for us is that, you know, September's a busy month with recovery month. There's a run every week, every, you know. And the day of our run, I know there was a lot of other, there was the Narnon convention going on. So, I mean, we had a great turnout and all that, but, you know, it was a little bit lighter than it normally would be. And that was because there were just other events going on, you know, at the time. So it is what it is. It was still fun.
Right. And too, with like the disease of addiction, you know, or just a disease in general, I get so angry, like so angry where when I'm, I don't know, maybe I'm on the computer or on Facebook and Someone will be saying that, you know, so-and-so pissed, they suffer from the disease of addiction. And then you have some Joe Schmo being like, that's not even a disease. And like, who? Oh, like, I know it's not even like, it shouldn't even affect me and it shouldn't even bother me. But it pisses me off to no end where literally my blood boils. And I'm like, you have no freaking idea what you were talking about. And you need to thank whatever higher power that you may or may not have that heroin did not walk into your house.
I lost it on a guy earlier this week.
Dun, dun, dun.
It wasn't even my post. It was somebody else's post.
Oh, Lord.
But it was somebody that I knew that was heavily involved with the Office of Drug Policy at the White House. And whether you're aware or not, the Office of Drug Policy at the White House is on the chopping block to be cut off the budget and not exist anymore. Nevertheless,
I know that was all
that
in
puts
the...
most of us parent groups up in arms.
I think part of it, when you see people who post that nonsense, that it's not a disease or, you know, they should rot or they got what they deserved. My opinion is that there is somebody that it's in their life that was an addict that hurt them. And like, that's what I think.
See?
I think there was
changing
an addict.
My perspective.
There's but an again, addict that's in their life that hurt them because there is not a single family in this world, in this country, that has not been touched by the disease of addiction.
Not one. I agree.
See, and that goes back to what I was saying about changing my perspective on things.
But see, those people that still talk like that never took the time to educate themselves about the disease. They just went with the stigmas and rolled with it, and that's how they feel, and you are not changing their minds.
No, you're not going to change their minds because something happened. Something happened to them where they decided that's it, they're rooted, they're not moving from that spot because they probably had a grandfather who was an alcoholic who just put it down, and that was it. Well, he was probably just a stubborn Irishman who did it, you know, and that's what he did. And he was like, I don't need help. Boom, I'll put it down. That's it. However... You know, for the most of us who are in, you know, an active addiction or have any of that, we need help. We need support. Everything and everyone in this world needs support. Your house needs to have support. Your building, your business, your congressman, your wife, your husband, your children. We all need to support each other. So why is it that we we push it away
and when put it people comes down. To
this was the theme of our run last year was conquering our addictions together. And right. that meant mm-hmm. as a community, nonprofits, families, neighbors, workplace, government, police, all working together mm-hmm. to solve this problem. We couldn't arrest our way out of it.
Right. No. No, and arresting these people is not going to...
There's no other worse feeling than the feeling of being and feeling like just so alone. Like that you have no one or nothing to talk to. But you do when you reach out and like tell people you have a problem or get the help you need.
But see, that goes. It touches back to what we had talked about earlier. They're more. This generation is more isolated and not as social, you know, mm-hmm. as we were, mm-hmm. Which makes it worse because they are loners. They're getting high alone. They're not talking to anybody. They're feeling isolated. You know, this is not good for someone who's battling addiction.
And how can that be fixed?
Well, you have to.
Besides what we're trying to do and trying to like reach out to them, but like. What can be done to fix this?
First of all, if we get rid of the stigma that there's something weird with us who go to meetings, okay? like we're
I love it. We're well, part sometimes.
Of a cult. We're part of this.
Sometimes yes. I just don't feel like it. I'm like tired.
I think of a lot of it is shame as well. Nobody's proud. Nobody woke up today and said, I'm going to be an addict. You know, I mean, it happens.
No, I say that when I speak. I say, you know, I earned my seat. I didn't. Nobody grows up wanting to be something, but I earned it, and this is where I am, and I'm grateful to have the seat, mm-hmm. and that I got here, and that I stayed. You know, my one of, you know, my brother who passed away recently, he was amazed that I still went to meetings. Mm-hmm. He was just like you still
go. Oh, you don't need that anymore.
And I was like, yeah, I still go. I still go because that's what we do. That's how you. If you were a diabetic, you would still take your insulin. Or if you had high blood pressure, you would still take that medication. That's what you do. This is my medicine. This is how I continue to be who I am. And I'm growing. I'm growing from it. But you said something, aren't that really, when you said about, I usually say to people, you know, you had no problem calling your dealer. Why can't you pick up the phone to call for help?
Because 10 digits is the hardest thing for anybody to pick up the phone.
But they're not even picking up the phone mm-hmm. anymore. They're texting the dealer. There is no verbal communication.
No.
None.
That's because of the skills. I mean, it still comes back to that, right? You know, our next generation is a society who looks down at their cell phones and hides behind their screen.
Did you hear that new diagnosis is text neck?
Text neck.
Yeah, like literally there is kids that already have arthritis in their neck. And they are like...
We're not covering it at the insurance companies. We're not
Not yet. But yeah, text neck. I'm like, are you kidding me? You actually have a name for that now?
You know, but what really needs to happen to help try and start to curb this epidemic is we need to start educating our children younger. You know, we're going into high schools and talking about addiction. It's too late.
I know in our high school district, they did it in the middle. They did it younger, actually. They did it very young. It's called the DARE program. What happened to the DARE program?
Yeah, they got rid of the DARE program. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because the DARE program didn't work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It did not work.
They need to bring
organizations in like City of Angels and Steered Straight, where we come into your school and bring kids who have successfully entered recovery in all different stages and have them hear it come from their lips directly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, New York actually has sober high schools.
We have a sober high school in Jersey. One. There's supposed to be three.
There's only one. It's up in our area, too. I forget what it's called because I have some friends up there.
I believe ours is Stephen Lesniak High School, and there were supposed to be three of them, one north, one central, one in South Jersey, and we have one. You know, maybe that'll change because, you know, now Governor Christie is really, you know,
trying to push for a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, he is just so dedicated to... you know, recovery and helping people, you know, that are seeking recovery and trying to remove those barriers, mm-hmm. Insurance and no insurance and whether you have it or not to get help. And I've updated, you know, our City of Angels Get Help page. So if you go to cityofangelsnj.org, you'll see our Get Help tab there. When you go there, it'll have a link back to the reachnj.gov site for New Jersey, which you can get help immediately, talk to somebody. They... are not going to talk. They'll talk to parents, but they really want to talk to the person seeking recovery. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get very far with them. They'll support you and answer your questions, but they want to talk to that person seeking recovery because they're there to remove those barriers and to help get you into treatment if you're seriously seeking treatment or detox. The same thing with Pennsylvania has a very comprehensive site as well for the opioids, and there's a link back to there. So if you live in Pennsylvania or New Jersey, you can go to that City of Angels, you know, or get help on our City of Angels.
There's a lot of addicts in that I'm aware of that are in our area, Delaware County and Montgomery County, that are coming together now to help the, not only the addict but the families of the addicts. But they're addicts themselves who have family members who are in recovery now.
You know, it's always interesting for me when we have a recovery coach training class, you know, because I'm a trainer, because you get a whole mixture of people in that class. You have parents, you have clinicians, and you have
addicts.
Yep. People in recovery.
It's going to be me soon.
That's quite a mix that you have in that class. So to get, you get all the perspectives in your week together on how people think. And I think that's helpful for parents, because I think that's probably the hardest part that they struggle with is, you know, their addicted child's not talking to them and they're trying to understand. So this really gives them a chance to ask someone else who's in the same situation those questions that might have been awkward for them.
You know how I know I'm an addict? Because for the last like 20 minutes, the only thing I could be thinking about is Taco Bell. Because last week after the show, I went to Taco Bell and I'm like, my stomach's growling.
I'm not going to Taco Bell.
You can just sit in the car next to me and I can do the drive through because I am the driver. That is how you know that I'm an addict, because every time I do something, I have to do it again and again and again and again and again. Down to, I haven't drank Red Bull in today marks 4 weeks. That's a month, a full month.
It's actually
that was good. Hard.
That's caffeine.
That's more than caffeine.
It I'm still tenfold. Drinking caffeine. Yeah, still drinking the caffeine, but the amount of Red Bull, people die from drinking Red Bull. My father had a friend who died from drinking Red Bull.
When Red Bull first came out, I was very much afraid of it. I have never had a Red Bull.
Me neither.
My fear
it's a heart attack.
Is that not a heart attack, that it would take me to another level that would be not in recovery anymore.
I should own stock in Dunkin'.
Well, right. Coffee, on the other hand, I still haven't given up, but I have slowed down on that. But it is.
I picked up my coffee, but whatever. Look,
but it is. It is behaviors a lot. And, you know, the drug is just a symptom.
Right.
It's just a symptom. And like, you know, Art said, we all have our behaviors. You know, it doesn't matter whether it is whatever the drug name you want to make it.
Hey,
some people
you're addicted
have
to the internet, your cell phone, sex, coffee,
shopping.
I mean, there's a million
you're
things.
You're addicted
out
to
there.
Your Facebook likes. How many people are liking my Facebook moves? Nobody likes me. I don't have any friends. Like, oh my God, we need to get a grip.
We have people addicted personalities. Yeah. I mean, it's the way it is. And we have to accept that we have addictive personalities, and we need to be aware of that. You know what I mean? So it's. Some addictive personality traits aren't bad.
They're hilarious.
You need to be aware of them. Right. You know, it's like anything in moderation.
Right. Everything in moderation.
I don't even know if that's like in my vocabulary sometimes.
But you know what? We take
I'm like
it
thinking
out of
about
moderation.
The amount of oils I collected, and I have like hundreds.
When we use in moderation. When we drink in excess. Uh-huh. These are those of us that had those problems. I didn't drink one or two. I had 15, you know what I mean? Till I couldn't function anymore. I didn't.
You probably were snoring.
I didn't know how
bad
to
that night.
I didn't sleep with anybody, so I'm sure I didn't offend anyone. But.
I'm like thinking the nights that, like, you know, anybody.
I know for me, like recently, what was it, like September, October, when they told me, I went and they said you have to stay away from the sugar. We're watching your sugar levels, so they didn't. You know, I just had to stay away from the sugars. The minute they told me that I couldn't have sugar,
sugar's
and
all around.
I didn't grow up eating candy. I didn't like it. I didn't stop eating sugar until 2 weeks ago. And I was like, this is insane. I am using.
It was like the chocolate bars were talking to you.
It was,
eat me.
Cookies. And here's the sad part. I was sneaking them in the kitchen when nobody was around. Like I was using
total addict
behavior. Like I would act like I was going to the kitchen for water and eat a cup of cookies and then come out with the water. Like, first off, nobody in the house even cares that I'm having the cookies.
You're just feeling guilty.
Right, I was feeling guilty, but that's great. That's the behavior that comes along. That's just who I am. That's the part of me that is still there. It's still there. Even no matter how hard I work on it, that person's there going, oh, you told me I couldn't do it? Oh, now I'm going to do it. I'm doing yes, it. You told exactly. me I can't. Now I got to do it.
And that goes hand in hand with if somebody tells you you can't succeed in something. I'm like, oh, really? 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 Because I'm going to succeed and I'm going to be better. And I'm going to, let me just stop right there because I can go on for a while with that.
And you're challenged to prove them differently, right?
Exactly.
Right. And sometimes I have said to people, you know what? The greatest revenge that I have found in life with people who have hurt me or harmed me or made me feel less than was living a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a long time to understand that concept. But living a good life was like, oh, you'll never amount to anything? Okay.
I remember saying I'd never live to be 30, nevertheless.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
And like life is amazing. And I know your life is amazing. And my life is amazing. Like
my life
hectic.
Is very full. Hectic. And full
but
and
amazing.
Great. I have my
20,000 kids.
I have five children.
I'm kidding.
I have five children.
You lived in a shoe.
I did. The house is like a shoebox. It is like a shoebox. However, it's my house. It's my house. It's my shoebox. They're my children who are I'll say that, we have expectations for our kids. But they're all great. They're healthy. They're alive. I am overly protective and very strict. And that was because a lot of fear they'll turn out like me. A lot of fear that they would turn out.
Yeah, but you turned out to be pretty amazing.
I didn't want them to go through what I went through to get to where I am. That was
that was probably one of the best things that could happen to them, because as a mom, you're aware of the things that could trigger their behavior to go in that direction. And you know what I mean? You're trying to stay ahead of that curve. I can
imagine the 19 on March 1st she'll be, and he'll be 18 on March 20th. They would disagree because their curfews are 9:30.
She's really cracking a whip there.
But it is a blessing to be clean. I love that the radio, you have these radio shows, and that I love that you have the groups and the walks. And I'm back from an age where we didn't do that. You didn't even acknowledge that you were in a 12-step program. You did. I remember
the anonymous people.
The anonymous people. I went to that movie, The Anonymous People, and this is where I stood for a very long time. Is that my reputation was not great? It was not good at all. So I wanted to live and just be quiet and not anybody know who I was or what I was doing, because I had so much shame attached to who I used to be. I am not her anymore, and we do recover, and we are amazing now. We're amazing,
mm-hmm.
And I've raised my children. I go to work. I have my own business. Mm-hmm.
We go to Pittsburgh and don't sleep, and a million miles away.
I have fun. I laugh.
We're going to Utah soon.
I'm going to be going to Utah. I'm doing things now that are amazing, and it's all things that are my purpose. Like, what is my purpose? My purpose is to help people, and just whether it's in recovery or out of recovery, to just be their best selves. That's it. And just help them get there and do it naturally. Do it naturally as possible. But my life today, if you compared it to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, is completely different. My children see me. I'm not ashamed anymore to say that I'm in recovery. I'm not. I am a recovering addict. That's a difference than being an addict. Being a recovering addict is very different than being an addict.
I only use the word addict before they enter any type of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
After they've gone to their first detox, they are a recovery.
Mm-hmm. Mm, look at that.
You know what I mean? And not an addict. And you know what? It's how you talk about it, and it's how we're going to help beat the stigma is the words that we use when we're describing the disease.
Exactly. Like, right. I'm in recovery, and I'm awesome.
You are very awesome. You're
you know
amazing.
What?
You're amazing.
We need people to not be anonymous and share their stories today because we're in the midst of an epidemic and there has to be hope. You know, someone that's out there using today, you know, maybe they're listening to this on their phone or whatever. They need to have hope that, you know, they didn't want to live the life of, waking up tomorrow morning and being
dope. Dreams and goals and aspirations.
And they did. And there's someone's son, daughter, spouse, neighbor, coworker,
mother,
someone
father.
In your community. You know what I mean?
And we are prime examples. That
when we stop caring about each other, what kind of world do we live in?
Mm-hmm.
I was at a meeting in my community just recently this year, and it was when I came out. That's what I called it, my coming out.
Someone also described it as coming out of, was it the recovery closet or no?
Out of the closet or out of the shadows.
Out of the shadows of shame. I forget what it was, yeah.
Out of the shadows of shame I came. And there's a house that they were talking about was going to be a recovery house, and there was a town meeting. So I went, and I had these people around me who were like, oh, can you believe this? And the way that they were talking about addicts, and they're saying this to me, they don't know me. They have no clue about me, nothing. But there was one gentleman who was standing there who said, I raised my hand, and he said, go ahead. And I don't know this guy. I have no idea who he is. So he pushed me up there, and I raised my hand, and I said, you know, the room's filled with fear right now, but the addicts are here. They're already here. And I said, because you're standing next to one. You know, you are standing next to one.
On that.
I'm a recovering addict. And so we're everywhere. There's more of us in your neighborhood than what you think. Because, of course, I know the recovering addicts in the neighborhood. But when I came back after saying what I had to say about the house that was going to be there, the gentleman said, thanks for doing that. You know, you let my wife see that her nephew was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's hope. That's why we have to share.
It is.
And that's why I came out. I couldn't believe I did. Let me tell you, I was breaking out in major sweat because of the fear of being judged. And
right.
I don't want my children to be judged by who I am.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I know that, you know, Denise is a beacon of hope in my life and many other lives. And before we end, I want to say my little saying of the night. People spend a lifetime searching for happiness, looking for peace. They chase idle dreams, addictions, religions, even other people, hoping to fill the emptiness that plagues them. The irony is the only place they ever needed to search for is within. I'm like, wow, it's amazing. I want to thank Denise for being here. And thanks, Art, for all the controls. And
yay, Art.
And I'm Bernadette, and this is Saving Lives, and we are out.